Okay, we start here on the bottom of Nun Amud Bet by the two dots. Gemara is going to continue now with the Trefot in the Mishnah. And here we have two of the Trefot that are involved with the digestive system. And in discussing this, I just want to note something that Tzvi had mentioned to me when we were learning the Mishnah, that he said that the pronunciation of the word here, we have two parts of the digestive system that are mentioned, one of which is the Beta Kosot, and the other of which is the, I pronounced it in the Mishnah as Hamasas. He mentioned to me that he thought the pronunciation should be Hemses, question of whether the hay belongs to the core of the word or does not. Turns out that that is actually a Machloket HaGirsaot in the Gemarot, and there's a Shita Mikubetzet, Ot Hay, Shita Mikubetzet on the Mishnah, and Membet. It's actually Rashi's commentary on the Mishnah. They were girsot, where whether it should be hamasas or hemses, and whether the hay was a preposition or a part of the core of the word. And so depending on which girsa you would have, it would matter whether the word is hamasas and the actual term is masas and hay is just a preposition, or whether it's hemses as being a single word. We'll pronounce it as hemses now, but just to note that there are two alternative pronunciations and that they would relate to whether hay is a part of the core of the word or is not part of the core of the word. All right, so now Mer begins. Here we have the Hemseis Ubeta Kosot. If they have a Nekev Lachutz, if they have a Nekev that goes to the outside, then they are Trefot. And we're talking about here the Beta Kosot is the reticulum, and the Hemseis is the Omasim. Gemara now is going to discuss Tanur Banan Machat Shinimtzeit Ba'uve Beta Kosot. You have a needle that is found in the walls of the reticulum. Mitzad Echad. Again, the reticulum has two. Covers two membranes. It has the internal membrane and then an outer layer that covers it over. So if the pin has only punctured the inner membrane, then it remains kshera. Mishnei tzadim. On the other hand, if the pin is able to get through it and was through both of the membranes, it punctured all the way to the outside, then it's classified as a trefa. Nimtza alea korat dam. If a spot of blood is found on the reticulum, meaning where the pin went through, there's a spot of blood over there. Now, a spot of blood, we don't mean that is just colored red, but rather there is either blood, physical blood on the outside, or we could see blood pooling below the skin. Biyadua shlifnei shchita. We know that it happened prior to shchita. We want to know when the pin went through. Now we know it for sure went through before shchita and the animal's a trefa, because the reason the blood is here is because it happened while the animal was still alive, and therefore the blood now is found here because of that. Lo nimtza lo kor adam. On the other hand, if there is no blood that's found on the puncture of the needle, biyadua shlachar shchita, then we know that happened after shchita, meaning that it was the handling of the butcher in the beta kosot of the reticulum. When he handled it, he caused some pressure that forced the needle out through the second wall or the second membrane, and that's why it punctured. But it doesn't mean that it was there before the time of shchita. Now, he gleed piyamaka. If the wound has a scab on it, if you look in Rashi, it says krusta, from the word crust. But if the blood is already crusted over, meaning that it's hardened and scabbed, then be a dua sheshlosha yamim kodem shchita. That happened 3 days prior to the shchita. Now, that will become important in Mekach u'Memkar. We'll see this in a second. Lo igleed. On the other hand, if there was no scabbing, piyamaka on the edge of the wound here, amotzi mechavero alav haraya. Then whoever wants to remove the money, the burden of proof is found on him. So what is going on here in terms of the Mekach u'Memkar? Mekach u'Memkar is a person purchased an animal, and he does shchita on the animal. And he wants to know, did he get a Mekach ta'ut, or did he not get a Mekach ta'ut over here when he purchased the animal? So he found a trefa. He finds a hole in the reticulum. He finds a needle through the reticulum. If we see that it's scabbed over already, that means at the time of the purchase, it was already a trefa. And then it's a mekach ta'ut, and he can get his money back. On the other hand, if there is no scabbing around the wound, then we don't know when it took place. And if he wants to get his money back, it's a mutzi mechavero lavaraya. As Rashi says over here, the fact that the animal is in his hands, we assume that the person who was selling the animal would not have given it to him unless they have the money. That's why the Gemara says, a mutzi mechavero lavaraya. He now has the trefa in his hands. He wants his money back. He's got to prove that the trefa existed at the time that he purchased the animal, not afterwards. Excellent. So it's a machloket rishonim here, whether this is unique to the beta kosot or not. It might be that this consideration is only by beta kosot, the reticulum, where it's lo shchichi. It doesn't happen frequently, and since it's lo shchichi, therefore it's considered a mekach ta'ot. But for instance, on the reot, it was on the lungs, or something that is a common form of trefa, then he assumes the risk when he purchased it. So that's one a set of the rishonim that say that this is unique to this case, or to certain trefot that are not common. In that case, he can claim that it was a mekach ta'ot. But if it's something that's common, then he assumed the risk, like you were asking. David means that he assumed the risk, and he has to deal with the fact that it's a treifa. There are other Rishonim who say that any treifa is problematic, and he can claim, as long as he can prove that it was there prior to the time that he purchased the animal, as long as he can prove that, then he can claim that it is a mekachto. Right? Now, Tosafot here has a big chiddush, which is that Rashi explains to us that the case is a motzi mechaver levaraya is because the person has the animal in his hands, so our underlying assumption is that he paid for it already. If he paid for it, then he needs to get his money back. He's got a motzi chaver levaraya. But what happens if he didn't pay for it yet? If he didn't pay for it yet, who's the burden of proof on over here? So it would seemingly, in any other hilchot choshen mishpat, it would be on the person who sold it to him. The person who sold it to him wants to get his money out from this individual now. There's a treifa here. He'll say, look, it was a treifa when I bought it. Prove to me it wasn't, and I'll give you your money. Tosafot says, no, that he has to pay the money anyway. Because the fact that it was found a treifa in his hands, we assume that the treifa happened there. And until he can prove otherwise, he is the one who's stuck with the treifa. And even he has yet to pay, he has to pay. And then a motzi mechavero levaraya is on him, which is a pretty amazing statement because that's not really a motzi chavero levaraya. But Tosafot says, since in the general cases or in the normal cases, he's already paid the money, that's why it's called a motzi mechavero levaraya. But nevertheless, over here, even if he has yet to pay the money, he will have to pay anyway. And he says, this is different than other cases. This type of case and actually kiddushim are different than other cases. In other cases where we have a question of paying or not paying, who's the burden of proof on? We always assume that whoever has the item, the burden of proof is on the other individual. By kiddushim and mecher, we will do whatever we can do to keep the sale intact and to keep the kiddushim intact. I mean, if there's some sort of tikkun ashuk of sorts that we want to maintain transactions. We are loath to undo transactions. We are loath to undo kiddushin. And because of that, we will try to maintain them at any cost, in a sense. So over here too, since the transaction went through, the treifa's in his hands, we're going to say the transaction went through, you got to pay for it. You want to get your money back, that's a separate story. You got to bring a proof. So the normal rules of a motzi chavero levaraya might be different than instances where there's a mecher, an exchange that already went through, and or in kiddushin, where we want to maintain the status quo, and therefore the burner of proof will be the one who wants to break the situation or the status quo. And now the Gemara asks a basic question, which is, all of a sudden over here, we've dealt with holes and punctures of treifot all the way through the Mishnah. All of a sudden over here by the Beit HaKosot, we have a requirement for blood, a karat adam. Why does this karat adam all of a sudden show up here in the Beit HaKosot? What happened to every other puncture that we've seen? That's what the Gemara says here. Umay shtam mikol nikuve de alma. How is this different than every other puncture? The afgav de lecha dam tarif mar. That even without any koret dam, we say it's a treifa. Hotam leka mide de misrach hocha. The difference here is that the blood can't wash away because there is something for the blood to coagulate on. Normally, when we have a puncture, yes, there is blood, but the blood washes away or comes off with the rubbing of the internal parts of the animal, with any liquids that move around. Whatever it is, the blood gets removed over time. Over here, since the needle, and the way we found it is that the needle's there, therefore the blood shouldn't wash away, but coagulate around the needle that's there. And therefore, in this instance, we will assume that the blood coagulated around the needle. And if you don't see blood, that means that it happened after Shechita. And that's why blood, or the issue of the blood, is in focus here, is because the needle is still there. Since the needle is there, we're going to assume that the blood would have coagulated around it. Right, but that's only if the object is still there. I mean, that most other cases, the object's gone or entered the internal part of the animal. Here, it happens to be that the needle's still situated. But yes, you're correct. Anytime the needle's still in place and we see it sitting in the puncture, it should have that same issue. All right, so now the Gemara says, I'm a lady of Safra Le'abaye. Did you see this young Tamar Chochom, this young whippersnapper, the Atami Marova that came from Eretz Yisrael? Vama Rav Avira Shmani. My name is Rabbi Avira. He's going around. He's a big shot. Rav Avira. Vama Maseu Balafanai Rabbi Machat Shinimtseit Ba'obi Beit HaKosot. There was a case, situation, that was brought before Rabbi, that there was a needle through the Beit HaKosot, Mitzad Echad, but it only had penetrated the internal membrane. Vitarfa, and he made it into a treifa. Shalach le loat le gabe. Abai called for him. He didn't show up. Azahu le gabe. So Abai went over to go visit him, go to see this Rav Avira. Havakaya Igra. Rav Avira was upstairs on the roof. Amar nechot mar. Abai called him downstairs. Benete, and let me speak to you. Lo nachit. He didn't come down. Shalach le gabe. Abai goes upstairs to go see him. Please tell me what the situation, what this case is, because it's a big chiddush. Here we say that statement, Tanu Rabbanan, that the machat has to go through both membranes, both encapsulations of the Beit HaKosot in order to be a treifa. And all of a sudden here we have psak from Rebbe, according to Rav Avira, that if it goes only through the internal membrane, that it would be a problem, it would be a treifa. So he says, Amalei, Maftir Knesiot Ano. I was an usher in the Beit HaMedrash. I used to usher the students in and out of the Beit Midrash. La'ela mi Rebbe Rabbo. Above or in place where Rebbe Rabbo was. Rebbe, the great one, was. Just a note here. Rabbi Rashi says here that it's Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. Is very, very difficult. Tell you about here the time of Abai and Rava. And we're talking about third, fourth generation Amoraim. And here we're having Rav Avira is talking to Abaye, and he's a young Tzurba Midrabanon, and supposedly he was there with Rabbi. That would be a significant amount of time. It'd be very difficult to have that situation where Rav Avira is still young, and he is seeing Rabbi. And some people say he lived a long time, but even if he lived a long time, then he shouldn't be a young Tzurba Midrabanon when he's seeing Abaye. So to say that it's really Rabbi, as Rashi says here, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, is difficult. I'm wondering if somebody left out the hay there, and it was Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, Rabbi's grandson, which would make a lot more sense, but that's not what we have in Rashi. And so there are others that say, which would make more sense, that Rebbe Rabba means his Rebbe, whoever this was, the great Rav of that time, whoever that was, that's who he's referring to, but not Rebbe, as we know, as Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. V'hava Rav Huna Tzipora'a, v'Rebbe Yossi Mada'a. So Rav Huna from Tzipori and Rebbe Yossi from Madai, Yoshvim Lefanav, they were there. Uvat Lefanei Rebbe, Machat Shinimtzeit Bovei Beit HaKosot. This is the case, Mitzad Echad. V'hofcho Rebbe, Rebbe flipped over the Beit HaKosot, Umatzala Alea Korat Dam. And then he saw a splotch of spot of blood on the other side, Vitarfa, and he made it into a trefa. So Rabbi flipped it over. He finds a korat dam, and he's tarfa. Remain shamaka, korat dam inai, and he says, if there was no injury to the outside, then why is there blood over here? Rabbi was basically saying it was punctured all the way through. And since it was punctured over there, it's a trefa. So Amalei, so Abaye says to Rav Avira, Tarach, Tariach. Either he says to Rav Avira, more like he's speaking to himself. Tarach, Tarach, I went through all this effort, meaning I went all the way out to Rav Avira. I went up to the roof to go speak to him. And it's an explicit Mishnah. I don't need this story for that. Or he was saying, Tarach, Tariach. Basically, that it was a waste of time. This was an unnecessary exertion on my part, because this is explicit Mishnah. It's our Mishnah, which is Hemsei Subeita Koso Chinikvu Lachutz, and we have that explicit Mishnah when it's punctured all the way through that it's problematic and it's a trefa. And I didn't need to learn this from Rabbi. Now it's not so clear that what he said is true, because Rabbi over here it was punctured on one side. And then it was Korat Dam on the other side. It doesn't say here that it was punctured all the way through the two sides. From back when we read the Tanur Rabbanan, the Braita that we have says that Nimtzale Korat Dam seems to be modifying that when it's Mishnei Tzadim, when it's punctured all the way through. And that's the way the Rambam reads it. The Rambam says that it means punctured, means it has to be punctured Mishnei Tzadim, means all the way through. And the Korat Dam is modifying that when it's punctured all the way through. There are other Rishonim who would point out, and that's a steer to Rebbe. And that turns out that the Maisa by Rebbe is not like what we have here. So therefore, they reconcile by saying that the Korat Dam is modifying Mitzad Echad, that Mishnei Tzadim automatically is a trefa. Mitzad Echad, if it's only punctured through the inner membrane, and there's a Korat Dam, then it's a trefa. So Korat Dam is modifying Mitzad Echad, not Mishnei Tzadim. There's a third attempt, I think the Rav Yoh, someone else also mentions that possibility of where the Dam is located. If it's punctured all the way through, then the blood does not have to be exactly where the needle came through or where the hole is. It can be around the hole. Whereas if it's only Mitzad Echad, if it's only punctured through one, then the blood has to be found opposite the needle. Where the needle should have come through the second membrane, the second skin, that's where the blood has to be found, directly opposite where the point of the needle would have gone through. But if it's somewhere else or dispersed, then it's not problematic. So that would be the difference, is where the dam's located between the two cases. But that's how, at least the two latter opinions that I brought, how they reconcile between the story by Rabbi, which is Mitzad Echad, and what we saw originally in the Braita that we brought about Mishnei Tzadim and Tzad Echad. Okay, the other thing to note over here is that the Gemara only addressed one of the two items that are mentioned in our Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we mentioned two things, as the Hemseit and Beit HaKosot. So we addressed the Beit HaKosot, the reticulum, the Hemseit. We didn't mention the Omasim. We didn't discuss at all here. And the Gemara is about to move on to something else and never discusses it. So what is the din of the Hemseit? So Tosafot brings down here, it's a machloket between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi says when it comes to the Hemseis, that even if it punctures a single membrane, the internal membrane, it's a trefa. It does not have to go through both membranes in order for it to be a trefa. Tosafot over here claims it's because what happened was that you can't see it. It really went through both of them, v'hivri, and then it became healthy afterwards, and it looks like there was only went through one, but we assume it went through two. The problem with that is, why only here do we say that? Why don't we say that by the Beit HaKosot as well? So the others that explain Shittat Rashi is that the second membrane on the Hemseis, so the Omasim, is not so strong or thick. And therefore, if it punctured the internal membrane, we do not assume that the outer membrane will protect it. And that's why it's automatically a trefa if it went through the internal membrane. As opposed to the reticulum, where if it went through one membrane, we still think the outer membrane is strong enough to hold it in. And that'll be the difference between the reticulum and the Hemseis. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam says the din of the Hemseis is exactly like that of the reticulum, of the Beit HaKosot, that they have the same din. If it punctures one, it's kasher. If it punctures two, it's a treifa. The Gemara only discusses beta kosot, but the same is true of the emseis. So it's a machlokas Rashi and the Reino Tam as to what the status of the emseis is. Rashi says it's different, that only one wall is needed there, the internal wall, whereas the Reino Tam says it has the exact same din as the beta kosot. Right now, naflamin agag. Moving on to the next treifa in our Mishnah, an animal that falls off the roof. Amrav Huna, heniach behema lamala, uva umatza lamato. He leaves. He has an animal up on the roof, comes back, and the animal's down on the ground. We don't worry about the internal organs being crushed, a concussion. We don't worry about any damage having to the animal here. So we don't, even though we would assume if the animal came off the roof and was pushed off the roof, then we would assume there's a problem. But over here, it's kapza min agag. We assume that the animal did it intentionally, came down on its own volition. And when it comes down on its own volition, we don't assume that something bad happened to the animal. We'll see why in a second. So how gdia the avale the Ravina? So this gadio, there was this goat that was owned by Ravina. Chaza chushla biipuma. So he saw shelled barley below, but there was a sunlight in the room, and he was above on the roof, and he's looking down through the sunlight, the opening in the roof, and he sees the shelled barley below. Dagar, he jumps. He lands down below. Actually, the Kameda Ravashi brings the animal before Ravashi. He wants to know what's the din of this treifa. Now, as Tosafot points over here, that over here he doesn't get up anymore. Below halach, the animal's not getting up by itself anymore, because we'll see later on that if it had walked already, there wouldn't be an issue. The animal's now flat on the ground, isn't moving anymore, and he's enjoying his shelled barley down below. So what's the din of this animal? So this is what he brought before Ravashi. I'm like, Hadam Rav Huna, that statement that we just saw, Rav Huna, Niach Behem Alamal Ba Matzal Lamato, En Choshishim Mishum Risukei Avarim. Why is it that we don't worry about the organs when the animal comes down of its own volition? Mishum De'itle Mide De Misrach. The reason is because an animal knows the way to let itself down. I mean, it clings to the wall. It walks down the wall, basically. In our case, that's not the case. He came down through a sunlight in the middle of the room. There were no walls for it to hang on. So over here, it went straight down and took the impact. As opposed to normal cases, I mean, you normally see it with cats and animals that have claws, that they're able to scale walls or move up things at high speed or come down them using their claws. The same is assumed here. The Gemara was going to use the term tzipar nav on the second half of the daf, but it means also with the hooves of the goats. The same thing, that they're able to somehow slow or cling to the wall to slow their descent and come down even on a vertical wall. But over here, there is no vertical wall, so maybe over here it's problematic. Oh, dil mishum da'amda nasha. That is instinctive. Animals will assess the amount they can jump, and they will make an assessment, and instinctively they know whether they can or cannot go down. And an animal will only descend if it knows it can go down. V'hainami amda nasha, in our case too. So just like with the case of Rav Huna, where you find it down below, it took an assessment, it came down. So it's over here, it took an assessment, thought it could come down, and went down, so it should be fine. Malay mishum da'amda nasha. Ravashi answered, that's the answer. The answer is animals instinctively know how much they can jump, and they will only come down on their own volition if they can do it. If they can't do it, they won't come down. So therefore, if we find the animal down below on its own, then we don't worry about Misukei Avarim. So over here, Mishum Amdanash, Vainami Amdanafsho. So now, Hayi Imroto, Dava Bei Rav Chaviva. So there was this ewe that was in the house of Bei Rav Chaviva. Dava Shadran Kare Batraito. This is not a case where it fell off the roof. This is another case where it's dragging its hind legs behind it. So Amar Rav Yemar, Hai Shigrona. This is caused by a hip disease. Whenever hip disease, dislocation of the hips, that's what's causing this problem. And the animal's not a treifa. It just has this hip disease and it's fine. Nakte. That's what's going on here. Matkifla Ravina Vidimachuta Shidra Yivsik. Maybe it's because, or maybe as part of this, the spinal column was broken or severed. So how do you know it's just a hip disease? But Kua, they went and checked this animal. And Ashkecheka Ravina, and in Hochanam, they found like Ravina, there was a problem with the Chuta Shidra. And it was a treifa. It's about filu achi. Despite all this story, v'hilchotai, the halacha is ki Rav Yemar. The halacha is like Rav Yemar, that shigrona shchiach, chuta shidra lo shchiach. And that's because we will assume that the animal has what's more common. What's more common here is that it has hip disease. The likelihood that it has a broken or severed spinal column is much more unlikely. And Rashi discussed this 2 days ago. And in general, when it comes to chazakot, when it comes to a chazaka, we will only be machzik an animal for something that is shchiach. We only worry about something that is common. So we will have in mind for something that is common. If something is uncommon, we will not be choshesh for a treifa or a problem like that. So over here, where it's shchiach that has hip disease, we will be choshesh for that. And the answer is chuta shidra, even though it happens sometimes, but it's just not common, and therefore we won't worry about the chazaka. And as Rashi mentioned yesterday, when it comes to all mumim, all these treifot, Rashi says that we don't worry about them, we don't check them, we are so mech on the chazakot that they're all good, except for the problems of the reot, because the problems of the reot are a significant minority of animals have a problem, and therefore we are choshesh for them. Amar Rav Huna, Zicharim, Amnachim Zedzeh, rams that bang heads, they are nogeach, they gore each other, they have fights. So when they fight, ain choshishim mishum risukei averim. We don't worry about the fact that there is some sort of trefot that's been caused here, because they're built to do this. This is what the animals do. This is part of their normal mating process. And therefore, we don't worry about the animal when they've gone through this process. But afagav de midvu, even though we find them groaning and in pain on the ground, we don't say that there was risukei averim here either. It's just that he's down for the count for a little bit. And Vekai made Simra Baalma. He's got a little fever. He had a bad day. Had a bad fight. So he's down a little bit and he's got a little fever, but he's not a trefa. So that's it. Vekai made Simra Baalma who did not get Luhu. They're just carrying a little fever. Now, E Nofel de Ara, on the other hand, if during the fight he was knocked to the ground, then Vaidei Chashin, and then we do worry about the animal. If he's knocked to the ground during the fight, that is something that's not Shriach, and that's not Shriach. Then we worry about impact to the body. And we worry about the fact of risukei averim. So Safod points out over here something interesting, that in general, we don't worry about an animal's fall. Naflam in a gag is only by 10 tefachim. 10 tefachim is normally what's considered to be nofel, to be a fall that injures. Over here, the animal's all of 4 tefachim off the ground, from its underbelly to the ground. If it gets knocked over, it's not falling 10 tefachim. So why over here are we choshesh, even though normally only choshesh for 10 tefachim? The Tosafot says over here, Mikom Mokom Chashin HaChamishum Denofio Machmad Haka'a, that there's impact here on top of that. It's not only it's just falling, it's falling after being butted or gored. It's getting hit very hard and then falling. So the combination of the two makes us worry about the risukei evarim. Amar Rav Menashe, or the other passage, but Girsa here is Amar Rav Menashe. Hani Dichrei, these rams that were deganvei, that were stolen by the thieves. We don't worry about the fact that the animals are injured, because the animals are kept within a corral area. They have a fence around them. They have a wall around them. The ganavim, to get them out of there, they have to throw them over the wall. So when they throw them over the wall, do we worry about them being injured? The answer is no. My time up. Because when they throw them over the walls, they make sure that the animals land on their feet. They have their hip down. They have their feet down. Because they got to get out of there. They got to move fast. So they want the animals to be running in front of them. So they toss the animals over to land on their legs. So they start running and they can keep them moving. So the ganavim have invested interest in the animals being healthy when they land. So therefore they put them over in such a manner that they land on their feet. Ahadrinu. Now if the ganavim brought them back and now they throw them back over the wall to bring them back. Vadei chashinan. Then we do worry about it. Because hane milei dadrinu machmad ira. The reason they returned them is because they were fearful. Whatever reason that they brought them back, they were afraid of the individual they stole from. They heard the government's after them. The police were getting close on them. So they go and throw it back over the wall so they won't get in trouble. So over there, they're not interested in how the animal lands. They're just interested in the animal being on the other side of the wall. So in that instance, we do worry about risukei averim because they could have landed on their backs and they could have caused a problem because they may not have landed on their feet. Aval machmat tshuva. If they do it because they want to do tshuva, they're here, they're bali tshuva now, they want to return the animals, then tshuva maliyotohu da'avde. When they return it, they want to return it the way they took it. If that's the case, they're going to make sure when it goes over, it lands on its feet, and it comes back in the condition that they took it. They're not just going to toss it over so it ends up dead on the other side or damaged on the other side. They're going to ensure the same way they took it out, they're going to put it back in. And therefore, we don't worry about risukei averim if these people are really doing tshuva. All right, now, this next little piece of Gemara is a little difficult because it's not clear. Rashi has two interpretations exactly what's happening here, and it's not totally clear. We'll try to make the most sense out of it, which is Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Hikal Rosha, v'halchala kalfei klapei zanva, or he hits it by the head, and it goes towards the tail. Or al zanva, he hits it on the tail side, v'halchala kalfei klapei rosha, and it goes towards the head side. Now Rashi says that in the first interpretation that he has a curved staff over here. He has a curved staff and he's hitting the animal from the side. The impact of the staff is coming on the side, meaning that he hits the neck, the tzavar, and in the same time with the curved stick, it also hits back or the hind quarters of the animal. Or the other way around, he's hitting the hind quarters and this curved stick also hits the neck of the animal at the same time. So the staff is hitting both, but it's coming from the side. The hit is coming from the side. Over there, we do not worry about it. On top of that, even if he takes the staff and comes back over the top, over the back of the animal, and it goes, as long as the weight of that hit is extended across the entire animal, in all three of these cases, we do not worry about the problem of broken limbs. Don't worry about the fact that there's a possibility that it became a trefa. And the first two, because the impact coming from the side, since it's coming from the side, and areas like the neck and the tail, the hindquarters, where there are no ribs, and there's no spinal column over there, we don't worry about anything being broken. Third case, where he comes down over the entire back of the animal. Well, there we don't worry about it because the force was spread across the entire back of the animal. The animal has the ability to take that type of hit and not have it broken. So in that case, we don't worry about risukei avarim. On the other hand, vi shalim chucha palge degaba. On the other hand, if the staff only reaches halfway across the back, meaning that it comes over the back head of the animal, down on the animal. If he had a long staff that went to the end, we said it's not a problem. But if his staff only reaches halfway along the back of the animal, then we do worry about it. Chashinan, because then the impact of the staff is not coming across the whole back of the animal. It's coming over a portion, and it might have broken the spinal column or ribs. It might have broken one of the vertebrae, and that could be problematic. Ve'id ba kitre. If the staff has nodes or knots on it, meaning that it has point, sharp things that are coming out of it, chashinan, also there were choshesh, because those projectiles could also cause damage to the animal. Ve'machia paske chashinan. If he hits it, instead of going longwise, all the hits we've talked about so far are longwise. If he comes across the horizontal of the animal, across the back of the animal, he hits this side, then we worry about it because there he could break a rib. He's not going across the spread of the animal where it can take the hit or the maka. Instead, he's coming across the back of the animal from side to side. Over there, all the weight is being borne on a single point on the back. And over there, we do worry about ribs or the spinal column being broke. That's the first way Rashi reads. The second interpretation of Rashi, which as you can see on the left side of Rashi over there, it says, Svarim Achrim, Hikal Rusha, Adam, Sheu Achoz, Biado, Shevet Achad, he's holding a staff. Vikal Rusha, Shobema, Valchala, Shevet Ad Zanva. And the staff goes all the way to the tail. Oh, Shikal Klape Zanva, Vigia Shevet Ad Klape Rusha. That those two cases are telling us what that case is if the staff reaches across the whole back. So the Rosha and Zanva is not even just cases where he hits the head and the tail itself, but even across the whole back, and that's the third case. So the way this one reads is that everything's done over the head. There's a head hit coming down over the head, or is a hit coming over the back. So one case, in both of those cases where he just hits the back or just hits the head area, we don't worry about it. And even if it goes across the entire back, we don't worry about it. So that's the way that this reading goes. So there's nothing coming from the side. Everything's coming from on top of the animal in this case. All right, so now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman, Beit HaRechem, Ein Bo Mishum Risukei Evarim. When it comes to the womb, we don't worry about Risukei Evarim. Basically, when an animal is born, we don't worry about the trauma or pressure that's been placed on the animal when it's born. We don't consider that to be as if it fell from the roof when it had been given birth to. So I'm going to lay Rabbi Rav Nachman. Rabbi says, Tanya de Messiah, I have a braita that supports your position. So I'm going to lay Rabbi Rav Nachman, Tanya de Messiah, I have a braita that supports your position, which is, Tinyok ben yom echad, if you have a baby who's one day old, metame beziva. He's able to be metame beziva. If he has an emission, is a zav emission, he's classified as a zav even from one day old. Here we're talking about a one-day-old baby. He just came through the trauma of birth. If you think the trauma of birth has impact on the individual, then we can have ikreikan mibsaro below machmat onso. There's a din by zav that a zav is only considered to be a zav emission coming mibsaro. If it's coming because it's an emission of a zav, but it's not some other factor that is causing the emission to happen. And here the Gemara there has a list of seven items that can cause the zav or emission to come mi-onus. And if it comes, one of them is actually trauma. So if he has trauma and that caused it, we could be toled on the trauma and he wouldn't be a zav. The fact that we don't say that and we say that he is a zav means there's a proof to you. It's a proof that there is no trauma of birth and there's no worrying about risavirim. This is why I says, no, that's not a proof. It was a C-section. It was a C-section, so there was no trauma of birth. He was taken out in a C-section, no trauma of birth. And that's why he's considered a Zav over here. True, maybe if he had gone through the regular birth canal, he wouldn't be a Zav. But the reason this one is considered a Zav is because he came out through a C-section. And as Rashi points out over here, the C-section is done, Ayidei Sam. It's done with some sort of medicinal potion. Ben Hu, Ben Imo Chayin. And they both survive. So this is before the days of respirators. So there is no, if the mother dies, then for certain the fetus has died. The fetus can't outlive the mother because as soon as the mother is dead, then the fetus is dead as well. So the only way that we can have a birth of this baby through a C-section is if the mother's also surviving. So that's what Rashi is speaking over here. The mother survived as well as the fetus in this case, but it's a case of a C-section. So Tashma, no, let's try to bring a proof from here that there is no trauma in birth. The Egel Shonolad B'Yom Tov. If you have a young calf that is born on Yom Tov, shochatim oto b'Yom Tov, you'll have to do shchita on it on Yom Tov. Well, how can you do shchita on Yom Tov if we're choshesh l'risukei avarim? We're choshesh l'risukei avarim, then you'd have to wait 8 to 8, you'd have to wait 24 hours, you'd have to wait for it to be healthy. How can you consider it to be mukhan at this point in time, and you can shecht it on Yom Tov to eat it? So I says, no, achanami kom shiyotza derech tov, and came out in a C-section. came out in a C-section. That's why you don't have a problem. Tashma, Vishavim, Shim Noladu Umumo Imo. Here we're talking about a Behema Bechor. A Bechor that is born is Kadosh from the time that it's born. If it has a mum in it, then it's given over to the Kohanim, it's Chulin. If it doesn't have a mum in it, it's a Tam, then it belongs on the Mizbeach, goes to the Mizbeach. Here we're talking about Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, an animal is considered Mukhan because it can be eaten, it can be Shechted on Yom Tov itself. So over here, you have a fetus inside of the animal, this egg is inside the animal, it's Mukhan al Gabe Imo. It's Mukhan because of its mother. Now, if it was a case of regular Kodoshim, that would not be the case. Because regular Kodoshim, they're already Kadosh mi Beten. A Kadosh mi Beten, then it's not Mukhan, because it wouldn't be ready. A Bechor is not Kadosh mi Beten. A Bechor is only Kadosh when it's born. Now, when this animal was born, it was born with a mum in it already. So since it had a mum when it was born, it never reached the point where it was Tam or Ra'oy L'Mizbeach. And therefore, just like its mother was Mukhan on Yom Tov, so too this baby's Mukhan. It never went to a status where it was not Mukhan on Yom Tov. Because as long as it was with its mother, it's Mukhan al Gabe Imo. From the point it's born, it was born with the mum in it. Since it was born with the mum in it, it was already Mukhan from the moment it was born to be eaten as Chulin or outside of the Mikdash. Shezeh mina Mukhan. So that's the case. All right, solve the problem again. It was a C-section, so we don't have a problem. Derech dofen mikadosh. That doesn't work, because over here we're talking about when it comes to Kodoshim, Rabbi Yochanan says, even Rabbi Shimon, who thinks that a C-section is considered a leido, when it comes to Isha Kiva Leid, a woman who gives birth, Isha Ki Tazria, a woman who gives birth, over there the Chachamim believe that's only when she gives birth through the birth canal. Is it true that she becomes Tameyah? As the 7 days, 33 days, 14, and 66 days, all that only applies to someone who gives birth in a normal birth canal. But a C-section is precluded from that because that's not called Leida. Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says a C-section is called a Leida. But even Rabbi Shimon, who says a C-section is a Leida, he only says that the Gabei Ishaki Tazria. He does not say that the Gabei Kodoshim, and that's because he learns that from Bechor. By Bechor, it says Peter Rechem. It has to come through the Rechem. It has to come through the birth canal. So, first of all, Tosu points out, you don't even need to say it by Kodashim. You don't need Rabbi Yochanan here. You know that Rabbi Shimon believes, and the Torah tells us, Pet Rechem by a Bechor. So, Rabbi Shimon has to agree that that's not called Pet Rechem when it's a C-section. But for sure, that can't be the answer over here, because a C-section would not be a Bechor anymore. So, that wouldn't work. It's a case where this Egel moved a little bit. It got down on the ground, it planted its feet, and it was able to move a little bit. And we'll see in a second that that's enough to classify it as not being a trefa. So even though it might have had risuka verim, or maybe trauma from the birth, but if an animal can get up afterwards, or can walk around afterwards, we're going to see in a second that that makes it not a trefa. So now, Amar Rav Nachman, Beita mit b'chayim, ein bo mishum risuka verim. In the slaughterhouse, in the butcher house, when they are going to shecht the animal, and they throw the animal down to the ground to shecht it, and Rashi discusses over here something even more extreme, that they used to throw the animal off a high place to knock it down, to weaken it, so that they could do a shechit on it. Ein bo mishum risukei avarim. The reason is because he's able to hold on. He knows what's coming is being pushed over. He's aware of the fact that he's going to fall, and therefore he braces himself for the fall. And since he braces himself for the fall is not something what we call nafla min hagag, where it happens unbeknown to him, unbeknown to the animal, where he can't protect itself. And that's why there's risukei avarim. Over here, the animal knows that it's being pushed over, it's being thrown over, and therefore it's able to brace itself for that fall. So how you Torah the nafal? We had this ox that fell down. Vishtama kal nigu chute. Doesn't make so much sense here. You see on the side, it's ginu chute. The hit. Had some moaning, some call or groan or moan that it was making. Al Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta, shakal mishufrei shufrei. He went ahead and he, after they shechted it, he took from the best, he bought from the best of that meat. Samalei Rabbanim and Alacha, how do you know that it's a kosher? How do you know there's no problem with this animal? Samalei Achi Amar Rav, Tziparnav, no eitz, ad shemegil haaretz. This is what I mentioned before, the nails or the claws of the animal, they plant them in the wall until they get to the ground. I mean, they brace themselves for the fall. Now, they use the term claws or nails over here, but they also mean the hooves, because we're talking about animals like an ox over here, and we said before with the gdi, we might use the same terminology at Misach Sarich, that they're able to brace themselves. When we say Naflamin agag, we literally mean unbeknownst to the animal. Unbeknownst to the animal means the animal has no idea it's going to fall or get knocked over over here. If it jumps of its own volition, we already saw that. And over here, even here, where a human might be pushing it over by the Beit Mitzvachayim, or when it falls, but it knows, or it was aware of the fact that it was going to fall, then we say that the animal braced itself, and it's not, there's no risuka verim over here. Amar Yehuda Amarav, Amda, if the animal stands up after it's fallen, Then you don't have to wait 24 hours. Bidika vadabai, but you still require a bidika. You still have to check that there's no damage here. So the underlying assumption is you don't have to wait the 24-hour waiting period to make sure that it's not a trefa, that it's able to live 24 hours, because it already stood up. Stands up, that's enough. But that's not enough in terms of not requiring a bidika. You still require a bidika. Halcha, if it walks, ain't tzricha bidika. If it walks, not only don't have to wait the 24 hours, you don't even have to check the animal. The animal is considered to be kshera without any additional checking. Rashi points out over here, if it doesn't stand up and it doesn't walk, it's on the ground, then you have to wait 24 hours. And as Rashi points out, afilu bad kunua. Even if you check the Evarim, that's not good enough. Even if you find Shlema, it's still a trefa because of the chavat, because of the impact. It's automatically, it's halacha l'moshe misinai, the impact makes it problematic, even if you check the Evarim and everything's intact. So you have to have one of these three things. You either have to have made late, you have to have a 24-hour waiting period, or Amda, it stood up, or halcha, that it walked. Now, the difference between Amda and halcha will be whether you require a bedika in addition to that. But the Amda, you require a bedika as well. By halcha, you won't even require a bedika. Tosafot points out, in a case that you wait May 8 to 8, where you wait 24 hours, he suggests that you also require a bedika there. That just like here, where if it's Amda, it stood up, you still require a bedika. So too, May 8 to 8, after a 24-hour period, you will also require a bedika after that 24-hour period. And it will not be sufficient that it waited the 24-hour period. It doesn't matter whether it stood up or whether it walked, it requires a bedika. If it extended its foreleg to begin to stand up, even though it didn't stand up, or it uplifted up its leg to begin to walk, even though it did not walk, that's enough. Meaning that just the intent to walk or to stand up is enough over here to qualify it as if it stood up or as if it walked. If it tried to push itself up, it looked like it was making a move to get up, even though it never stood up, that's enough over here. Here they are much more makil. Now, the Girsa in our Gemara looks like they took it out, which is the Hilchata. The case is, when it falls off the roof below Yad'a, when it didn't know about it, and then it stands up. It requires a bidika. It doesn't require 24 hours. If it actually walks, then you don't even need a bidika. It's probably taken out because it's unlikely that the words velo yada'a were found in the Gemara. Rashi says about heichad nafla min agag below yada, that he's defining what it means. Heichad nafla min agag means below yada. But again, both Rashi and Tosafot have this hilchata in their Gemaras, and they have that girsa there. Now, Rashi is pointing out that it's a case of lo yada. That seems to be added into the Gemara later, that they put lo yada became a part of the hilchata and not just the commentary of Rashi. And Tosafot points out over here, why don't they just say halacha ke Rav Yehuda? We just had a Yehuda Merav, so why don't we just say halacha like Rav Yehuda Merav? He says the reason we are specifically saying what the halacha is because Shemayin Shmina Dafka Amda Lemute Pashta Yad Amod V'Ninar Lamod. It's going to exclude from the other two Amoraim who qualify that statement of were Mekiel and said that it doesn't really have to stand up, it just has to make a move to stand up. So the Hilchata is coming to preclude them and say, no, the halacha is it must stand up Amda, period, not this qualified statement that we saw from the other Amoraim. So now, Amra Meimar, Mishmeid Rav Dimi Midarda, Nifula Shamru, Tzricha Bidika, Keneged Bnei Ma'ayim. When we talk about this animal that fell down, the area that needs to be checked is Keneged Bnei Ma'ayim of the innards, the internal organs of the animal, against the, basically where the digestive tract moves through the animal, but that's the whole midsection of the animal. You need to do the whole internal cavity. You have to check in the entire cavity, not just where the limbs are, not just where the digestive system and intestines move around. So, what's the din with the simanim? Do they require bedika or not? We're talking about the bnei me'ayim. Are you talking about the chalal? You're talking about the midsection of the animal. What about the simanim, which are up at the neck of the animal? Do those need require bedika as well? So he says, simanim, amalei simanim kashim hein. The simanim happen to be stronger and harder, eitz on the fila, and therefore they're protected from a fall. So we do not have to do a check on the simanim because we assume that part of it is that the animal tries to protect those areas because they're more delicate. Those simanim are stronger. They're not just fall apart just because he fell down, and therefore we do not require bedika on them. Am Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Of Shenechbat al Pnei Amayim. A bird that hits the water, meaning that it wasn't protected, it fell over, it was thrown, and hits the water at a high impact. Kevin Shishat Malekumoto Dayo. If it swims one length of its body, then that's enough. That's equivalent of what we'd call walking or amda for the animal. Here, the bird moves. V'lo amran elo mimata lamala. That's only true when it swims upstream against the current, because then we know it's moving. Aval milamala mato, if it's downstream, then mayuhu dishbule. Then the current is carrying it downstream, and there's no proof to the fact that it swam. V maya kaime leitlamba. If it's still water, then it doesn't matter which way it goes, because either way, the movement is coming because of the bird itself. V shoda tzive. If we see that there are little wood twigs in the water, and they are flowing downstream with the current, and the animal is vikadme, and it's able to beat them, meaning it's swimming faster than those twigs that are there, hakadme. That's a proof that it's moving, and therefore we can count that as swimming for the animal, because it's clear that he's making progress, because he's moving faster than the current, because he's exceeding the items that are in the current itself now. So therefore, here, if it swims, it has a din like halicha of walking and will not even require a bedika. Okay, next case is glima matiach. You have a trampoline in your backyard and a bird lands, gets flopped right into that trampoline. So you have a glima matiach. It's a taut jacket, piece of cloth that's strung out. Then chayshinan. If an animal hits that, then the impact will hurt it because it has no give. Since it has no give, we worry about risuk avirim. Delo matiach, on the other hand, if it's not taut, this piece of cloth, this trampoline, loy chayshinan, we don't worry about it because we assume that there was some absorbance of the fall and there wasn't as strong an impact because it wasn't taut. Uf umu paf. Uf umu paf means it was double folded. The cloth was folded over twice. There are loy chayshinan. Since it was folded over twice, it doesn't have as a taut a feel to it. It's not as strong. And therefore, there's some cushioning impact for the animal. And we don't worry about it when it hits in that manner. Isla, if we have a net, umikarve kitre, and its knots are tight together, meaning that the netting is very tight, kashinan, then we worry about it because then it's the equivalent of being a flat piece of cloth that is taut. Lomikarve kitre, on the other hand, if it's a net that has wide loops or wide knots in it, loy kashinan, then we don't worry about it because then that open space gives the animal area where it can release some of that pressure, and we don't worry about the risuka verim. Kitna, if you have flax, the avid betune was put together in bundles. Chayshinan, if the animal hits it, if the bird hits that, then we worry about it because that impact is a hard impact. The high geese of the high geese of the chayshinan. On the other hand, if the bird hits it on the side and kind of rolls off of it, then we assume that the flax helped to absorb the hit, but it wasn't like a straight-on impact. So if the animal comes straight down onto the bundle of flax, we say that's a hard bundle, and we say that there was risuki verim, possibly is risuka verim, you have to look into it. On the other hand, if it falls and kind of rolls off the side of it and it moves off the side of it, then we say that the cushioning of the impact happened, not necessarily that there was a full impact. Asuraita, if you have a bundle of reeds instead of a bundle of flax, chayshinan, and again, once again, we are choshesh for the fact or the possibility that it was a hard impact and there was risuka v'im. Kitna de dayik v'nofitz. If you have flax that was crushed and combed, lo chayshinan, and over there we don't worry about it because then all the hard material is taken out and whatever is left is a softer cushioning material. We don't worry about risuka v'im. Dyke, on the other hand, if it was crushed, velo nafitz, and it wasn't combed out yet, then we are chayshinan. Then we worry about it because the harder material that's still there can cause or be a difficult for the animal's impact. David bizrei, if they were bundled up, if this stuff that was dyke and nafitz already was bundled up, came into ikabei katre, since it has knots in it and has strings in it, chayshinan, then we worry about it. So even though before we said that it was dyke and nafitz, we don't worry about it, if it's bundled up in that case, then we do wonder about it because of the knotting and the rope that's around it. Dakto. Now, dakto, as Rashi describes over here, it's ne'oret shivrei givulim. It's the leftover, the dust of the broken staves or stalks of the pishtan of the flax. That's what we're talking about here. The words that I saw were either it was a coarse toe or shives, then chayshin, and we worry about it because that's a harder impact. On the other end of it's dakto. And here, obviously, dikdakta means fine. And here I saw that it's like a fine toe. Lo chayshinan. And then we don't worry about it because of the fineness of the material. We assume that it's a much more cushioning impact. And we don't think that the animal has risuk evarim. Navro. Navro is a dried bark of palm or palm-based, whatever that is, dried palm bark. Chayshinan. That's hard because it's still wood. It's still very hard. And if it impact, if the animal lands on that, then we worry about the impact. And then timtecha. Now, kimtecha is either like crushed bark or strands of the bark. We know that the palm tree is very fibrous. And therefore, when you take out the pieces of wood from the bark or from the outside, you can peel off those fibers. And they used to make strings from that. So if it's timtacha, if it's already been taken apart, meaning the bark is still not hard and woody anymore, but rather it's been pulled down to its stringy texture or stringy material, then it's lo cheshin, and we don't worry about it. That's a much more cushioned impact. Kitma, when we talk about ashes, niala. If they were sifted already, then cheshina, and then we worry about it. If they were sifted, then there's no longer a cushioning impact, then you have a much more hard impact, and we worry about it. On the other hand, lo niala, if it was not yet to be sifted, then lo cheshin, we don't worry about it, because the thicker or bigger ash also gives more impact to the animal, and it's a cushioning effect on lo cheshin. All right, I'm going to stop here, even though the sugya continues pretty straightforward here. But it just goes down to the two dots, and we'll, you know, quarter through to tomorrow's daf if we continue. But tomorrow we'll start again with more materials that are cushioning or not cushioning an impact, and then the Gemara will give a general principle to try to help us understand what is the qualification for a soft or hard impact. Okay, we'll stop here.